afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're so happy to see you here back on the Tanya Joy Show. As always, thank you for doing your part to help us grow, because we are kind of this in this new place of media and journalism, and the way that this can grow and the way that more people can hear the truth and be turned on to what's really going on behind the scenes is for you to share. So what I want to ask you to do is right now, as we get started with this show today, that you would go and share it to your social networks. Hit the share button. Also hit the like and subscribe if you're not already subscribed on our Rumble channel or on the Blessed News Network, where we are so honored to have the show, or whether it's, you know, LinkedIn or one of those other places, just hit the like button. It helps with the algorithms. That's why we ask you to do that. It's all about these crazy algorithms nowadays, because otherwise they block some of this content. Also, I want to remind you, our website is up, it's running. I would love for you to go over there and check it out. Again, you can subscribe over there. You're not going to get anything really or inundated, but we have had to rebuild our CRM. We've, as you know, for those of you that have followed for a couple of years, I've lost that website and I've lost my CRM probably 3 times. So I've had to restart yet again, but guess what? Now I own it all. It's all under my care and my wings. So now I won't lose it. So if you go and check that out, we would love for you to just provide your name and email so that we've got it for when we do maybe get to the place where we can send out emails and updates about the shows that we are producing here. That website is tanyajoy.tv, and it looks like Tanya Joy, TANIAJOY.TV. All right, well, you have reached us for a fantastic show today. Many of you who follow, you know we've talked about the decline of our world, the decline of particularly and specifically our universities and our grade schools, K through 12, right? We have watched that. And it's very interesting because I believe we may be living in a time period where we may actually see universities disappear. We're seeing that what happens is when these universities go woke, they end up going broke. They end up getting hit hard, which in my opinion is a good thing, because we need to stop this narrative. We've watched it hit businesses, institutions, and universities a lot over the last 3 years. We're in a day of transition. And many of you know that. I know you as my viewers, for those of you that I connect with, I know you believe that because you've sent me messages and talked about that. And today we have an amazing man here who has a wide background, such an amazing bio. I'm going to read some more of that to you when we come back and get the show started. But he is the author of a book called Conformity Colleges: The Destruction of Intellectual Creativity and Dissent in America's Universities. I mean, there's not much more to be said. There's so much in just that title alone. So you're not going to want to miss a moment of today's show. Today is Wednesday, March 6th. I'm Tanya Joy, and this is The Tanya Joy Show.
Okay, well, we weren't
Now, welcome back to the show.
You as well. I'm so excited to have you both on the show.
And I know we had such good feedback and reception.
General Flynn, what an honor.
Joshua tracked me down in a big tent of about 4,000 people.
How are you?
I am doing so great. Hello, everybody. Thank God I am wonderfully great.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
Because what is prayer?
I'm just Jewish, you know what I mean? And
I'm thrilled to be here with the two of you.
Me too. It's
like, and that's who these crazies, these evil ones.
It is. You said it right. Good job.
Perfect.
All right. The Gibson sisters. We are so excited to have them on with us on Resistance Chicks today.
Good morning. It's time to run. These people that get higher up, sometimes I've thought,
these are glory days and not gloomy days.
Like, I love it.
it kind of works.
What's awesome about the tour is people like you.
Good.
I love the applause. That's cool.
There we go.
Hi, Joy.
Everybody, welcome. We are so excited. Are you ready to get the show on the road? Let's go. Hi, everybody. Despite open borders, staggering grocery and gas prices, and all of the talk of war, there is a miraculous revolution of health taking place across America. And that's because your body is a miracle machine, fully capable of healing itself. That's why we're here today to help you and your body do miraculous things and regain your optimum health. So now is the time for you to learn about the Magic Dycol family of products, the NanoSoma liquid spray, the Metasomer topical gel, and the Metasomer telomerase natural skin cream. Join the revolution of wellness and take back your health by signing up for our free video series at iwantmyhealthback.com/Tanya Joy. Now you can watch our free video series and learn how to take your health back. Go to iwantmyhealthback.com/Tanya Joy. That is iwantmyhealthback.com/Tanya Joy. Imagine you can unleash the power of your own body to restore itself. When the Magic Dycol products trigger the nuclear receptors in your body to take care of you in ways you have never even imagined. So go log in now at iwantmyhealthback.com/Tanya Joy.
Government-induced inflation, taxes, rising interest rates, political instability. All of these can have a crushing effect on our investments, often causing the stock market to go down. But they can also cause gold and silver to go up.
Hi, this is Dr. Kirk Elliott. Buy gold, buy silver, buy now, but buyer beware. Precious metals companies are not created equal. As a PhD economist, I have been in the financial, economic, and precious metals business for 3 decades. The philosophy of my firm is people over profit. I encourage you to read my bio to learn more about me at KirkElliottPhD.com.
Now is the time to own physical metals in an IRA, 401k, and outside of a retirement plan. Don't let the government destroy your hard-earned assets any longer. Call 720-605-3900 or visit KirkElliottPhD.com.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. So my guest today is David Barnheiser. He has a very impressive resume. I'm only going to give you a very short clip of this, and you can go and read more. We'll get into that later on where you can find that. But he's a professor of law emeritus at Cleveland State University. He received his law degree from Ohio State, graduating summa cum laude, and a master's of law degree from Harvard University. So come on, he has seen it all. He has worked behind the scenes and he knows what he's talking about. He was a Ford Foundation Urban Law Fellow and a Clinical Teaching Fellow at Harvard University. He has worked in the Federal Legal Services Program in Colorado Springs, representing lower income and minority clients, as well as community development. He's taught at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, as well as an adjunct offering a course in the economics of poverty, examining the impact of economic systems on poor and minority people, and the limiting of opportunity and social justice for Blacks, Latinos, and other minorities. He has consistently worked at providing programs and teaching others about the importance of civil and criminal representation to minority and economically disadvantaged individuals in the greater Cleveland area. We're going to have a great conversation today, so let's bring David on in. Hello, David. Welcome to the show. It's such an honor to have you here today.
Thanks, Tanya. It makes me blush when people talk about me because I was trained never to talk about yourself. So,
well, and it's quite impressive. And I was like, when I was reading your bio, I'm like, man, like this man is brilliant, like unbelievable the experiences you've had. But you know, the thing is, the reason that I think it's important to give some of those highlights is because it really sets the foundation for why you actually should have a voice in this, because you've been there, you've done it, you've experienced it, you've worked within these universities. It's different for somebody like you who's been on staff, who's studied, who has been there, done that, versus someone who's just kind of been on the outside and they have an opinion about it. And that's why it's important. That's why I wanted to read as much as we could, because it shows the foundation of why you should have a voice in this issue. So anyway, and we only read half of his bio. Let me just tell you, this man is very, very educated. So it's fantastic. Don't blush. Be proud of it. It's wonderful. So anyway, let's start at the beginning, okay? Because you do have a very impressive background. What took you and what did you start to see that woke you up, that opened your eyes, right? To kind of get you to this point of even coming to the place of writing this book.
Okay. As you note, I mean, I have always been a social, you know, I was a social justice warrior before, 30 years before they invented the term. And I thought it was amusing that in the early 90s, they started saying that for, because it made them feel good. Yeah. By them, I mean the progressives and the, I hate to use the term, but it's a real, the Marxists and the neo-Marxists and the socialists are doing this. And I want to jump back 1 second in that is because you said I was at the beginning and I was, or at least awful close to it. When I got out, I mean, I worked with a lot of people in the faculty and other people at Harvard when I was there. And when I didn't understand exactly that what was going on with them in, this context, when I began teaching law at Cleveland State University, creating and developing their clinical program, which actually was considered one of the best in the whole world. They don't really do much of it anymore because I'm not teaching there anymore, but that was true. And when I left the first year I was teaching, I got a phone call from people I had dealt with at Harvard. And the fact is, they were telling me they wanted me to be part of something that they were doing. And that something was, they described it. It was social justice. It was minority rights. It was fairness. It was creation of opportunity. It was provision of representation. It was education and so forth. And after listening to it, it sounded great. And I asked them, what's the essence of it? What's a core? And they said, well, it's Marxist. It's Marxism and socialism. This was 1972 or early 73.
Holy cow.
Going back to the beginning. Wow. Because now a lot of the people in that movement deny the reality of the fact that a Marxist socialist approach is at the base of that. And what then it was called critical legal studies, because it's the whole thing started off in really at Harvard Law School. And then over the next few years, it emerged and morphed into other parts of the university. And then in a minority sense, it became partly women, but mainly critical race theory. And it was named critical race theory. And it began manipulating the people in it. Understand, they understood something vital, which is what I wrote a book on Sun Tzu and Musashi, Chinese and Japanese military and martial arts strategy a while ago. And the reality there is, and one of the members of a major member of this movement told me that and admitted it. One of the things in that is fighting a war of attrition. If you are numerically and resource wise for the moment lesser than your opponent, you have to carefully and stealthily move your forces, maneuver your forces, identify the critical points of leverage on which your opponent depends, gradually occupy and take significant positions in those faculty, in this case, it was faculty and university administrators, and take those positions and don't become obvious as to what you're trying to do or how many people you have involved in it until you're ready to really take over. And that's what, in fact, happened over the period, in, say, 1970 to 2000. And then by then, a major thing that occurred was that social media and the internet. The social media and the internet allowed a very significant growth in coordination and networking and reaching out and communicating with people that you needed to have in place in certain places, and you needed it to work together with a coherent strategy and agenda. And that is what has happened over the last 20 or so years. They have taken over the whole deal, except for a few. You know, you have Hillsdale College in Michigan, you have Grove City College, you have the experiment that's going on with the New College of Florida down here, which is a former very, very liberal small college in Florida, considered to be a very good school. And Ron DeSantis basically fired the president, took over the school, reconstituted the faculty to a certain degree, and is trying to grow a more conservative. And I actually don't like to use the word, I mean, people use it typically, conservative and liberal. I don't like it. I'm not a conservative. I'm not a liberal. I try to see what I care about. I try to understand situations. And then I try to say or do something about that situation. So yeah. I think it's too divisive to say conservative and liberal, because who the heck knows what a conservative is?
Yeah. For you? It's really, and really, yeah, the conservative term, it's like, you know, 30 years ago, you didn't really even hear that. It was Republican, Democrat. And right. It's just like, we're just continuing this path of, well, let's just find a new term that we can create separation, ultimately. Yeah. I mean,
well, that's exactly what's going on.
But so this is fascinating. I want to go back a little bit. So back in, I mean, I'm thinking of this from I'm somebody who has just woken up to this reality in the last 5 years of really what has been happening in our nation, what has been happening in our government, in our institutions, in our organizations. I'm a musician and an actor. So for me, when it was college time, I was like, I'd rather go start auditioning, you know? So I didn't go to a normal university out of high school. My sister did. She went to Baylor down in Texas. So big school, but you know, Christian foundation, but they're now pushing a lot of this that has all seeped into their school now. But to think that this goes all the way back to the 70s.
Oh, it is.
Is eye-opening, but also makes a lot of sense, because in order to, and I would love for you to talk about the reasoning behind this, because in order to overtake in a Marxist way, right?
Yes.
You've got to build that into the people for generations, so that by the time those people who are 18, 19 are in their 40s, they can start taking over now. So like, speak on that, because I am not trained to be able to speak on that. You know this much better, but the depth of why they would do that and why they would go after the universities back then.
Because, I mean, Mao Zedong and Marx clearly understood 1937, Mao in China, wrote a treatise when he was beginning his revolution. And he wrote one, and that treatise, a short one, but it condemned liberalism. What he meant by liberalism was the kind that it's supposed to be. That's why I think they've destroyed the real meaning of that term. Liberalism was supposed to be positively progressive, sure, toward better society, better justice, but it was about free thinking. It was about learning. It was about interaction and discourse. It wasn't about using it as a power center to suppress people. And so he wasn't talking about the current liberalism, if you want to call it that, or progressivism, because that's doing what Mao would want.
Yeah.
In that. So what he said was, in 1937, he said, liberalism, in that classic sense, liberalism we can't allow, because what it does is make people think, and it makes people, or causes people to learn, and it causes people to critique, and it causes people to question blind obedience to orders. And those are not the kind of people that Mao wanted or would tolerate in his revolutionary movement, because it probably wouldn't have succeeded, because he was after power. He wanted that power. He was the leader. He knew everything, he and his close generals and supporters. And that's why I'm saying that's why they wanted it wasn't only the universities, because they didn't have really universities at that time. They would, at least not many, but it was our equivalent of K-12. And the idea that they have, and it's in the book, if you get them while they're young, when they're vulnerable, while they're open-minded, when they're curious, and you are the powerful authority figure, which is what he was in China, that what you do is you brainwash them, intimidate, indoctrinate, and use propaganda on them. You are the one who is sort of the figure, you know, listen to me, I'm experienced, I'm all this stuff. And so you create your base, your political base, and your military base of people who are committed to your cause and even willing to die for you. Yeah. And if you weren't, that's why he had the Red Guard in the 60s when he moved along far enough. And there were some people who were criticizing the Chinese government and wanted more of a democracy. He launched the Red Guard movement where youth, propagandized youth, betrayed their own parents, turned them in, killed some of their teachers, had re-education camps and everything for people that they were identified as not being with or on the side of the movement or questioning anything about the movement. And you saw the same kind of thing in Nazi Germany. You saw the same kind of thing in Mussolini's Italy. You saw the same kind of thing in the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, with the communist youth and the Komsomol. You saw that. That's a typical strategy. Seize them through propaganda, and the younger you can get to them, the better. Now, they seize them, and you already remarked on this. It's been going on long enough that in the activist movements, the people who came into the universities, and a lot of it, and I was, I'm an activist. I was an activist. People came into the universities, came in with a very strong, many of us came in with a very strong social commitment and activist orientation. Mm-hmm. I think what we came in with was those of us, because this is not everybody, okay?
Sure.
Came in with a desire to enhance justice, enhance the fairness in society, confront racism, which we did as lawyers before and activists before. That's what should occur.
Sure.
But then what happened, as happens with any kind of Maoist movement, and I worked with a lot of different people in activist causes, and a lot of them are wonderful human beings, but there's a core, and it's just like the communist cell organization. There's a core of people who are so intolerant and so committed to their vision that they work to squelch, shame, embarrass, humiliate, change, et cetera, anybody who disagrees with them.
Wow.
Or I'm an activist. Yeah. I believe in these issues. I always believed in these issues. But there are many, many people. Most people are afraid to say anything about it because they're awfully nasty people out there who are doing this. And they can destroy your career. But I've always confronted people. So I'm a little unique in that way. Only if I thought it made sense or was necessary. But most people, they can lose their career. They have lost their career.
Yeah, many.
Lost their job, and they've been harassed and intimidated if they don't go along with that, or if they say something that contradicts any of the major things. You look at this book, what's in it, it will not be received well by the progressives and the critical race theory or the woke, people.
No, because you're exposing their truth. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
exposing.
True. I'm not saying I'm right in every single sentence or anything else, but I feel totally confident that it's a fair and honest interpretation of what has occurred and what needs to occur.
And I worked corporate America for a decade and ended up losing my job in 2021. And it started when they started bringing in DEI training, which it started as critical race. Then they, of course, changed the term to DEI so that nobody knows what it is. Yes. I knew what it was, and I refused to go to these meetings and participate. And I was the only one. And I eventually ended up losing my job because I would not. And I believe I fundamentally believe the same thing. Of course, I don't want there to be, we should all be equal. There should be, everybody should be equal based on their talents. Work hard, get an opportunity. It shouldn't be your opportunity is because of the color of your skin. That is ridiculous, but it's also fascinating because back to what you were saying about how they did this and all these other nations where the kids get to the point where they get their kids to turn against their parents. That's what we are seeing right now in America. This is the stage, for those that are watching or listening, we are seeing that. Kids can go to a court. We've got laws passing in different states where if the parents can't acknowledge or won't acknowledge that their child, who's a daughter, now says, no, I'm a man. And the parent goes, no, you're not a man. the courts can come take that child away. This is exactly what we are now seeing in America, which I never thought we would see here.
Well, the whole essence of these movements, the ones we talked about before, the Maoists, and the communist Marxists, is to break people away from the family.
Yeah.
Destroying the nuclear family is a fundamental tool in what they're doing, because they want the party. They want their people. And it's not even a big number of people, but they want the party to be the family. And so what you have today, take for example, to give you an idea, 1.3 billion people live in China. 3 million, slightly over 3 million are members of the Chinese Communist Party, which runs the whole thing. And so you have such a small percentage of the population in control of everybody else.
Why do you think, this is a question that I have thought and wondered, you know, they want to break down the nuclear family. We know that they want to, you know, eliminate new people. I mean, we know that as well. That's part of their agenda, is to depopulate. But let's say they break apart this nuclear family. And is the mindset to then turn these people into just soldiers? Because what are they going to do with all, like, you know, I'm thinking of the kids. They get kids to turn against their parents. I mean, come on, the government doesn't want to deal with all of them. So what is, like, you know, part of me is like, seriously, do you want to raise all these people and kids and like take care of them and fund them? And you know what I mean? What do you think the root of that is?
Well, let me preface by saying, I think that they have done a masterful job at undermining a system. Mm-hmm. I think they have shown a certain degree of strategic brilliance in that. Having said that, I don't think they have any idea of what to do with the disaster that they are in the process of creating.
Okay.
And you see that virtually everywhere, not only in the US, but, you know, Marxist systems have never succeeded. They contradict the reality of human nature. And I was saying this to somebody yesterday, the reality of Marx basically adopted the Socratic and the Enlightenment thesis that educated properly, or taking away the oppression of the ruling class, that's why they use oppression all the time, taking that away, once you take that away, the humans are wonderful and they will blossom and the state will wither away. We don't need anything, which is the communist ethos. We don't really need that. People are good. They will understand that. They're completely wrong. Most people, it's not fair, but we all have a little evil in us.
Yeah.
There isn't anyone I know, and I try to be good. There isn't anyone who doesn't have a selfishness, a degree of selfishness, of nastiness, of resentment of, I don't want to use the term race, but resentment of people who are clearly not the same as they are in some dimension that they have to think is important. And if they think being of one ethnicity is important, then they're not of that ethnicity, they're not quite as good. Okay.
Right.
Everybody does that, for God's sake. You know, everybody. And you can't even have, and if you had one of these DEI sessions, you wouldn't be allowed to say what I just said.
Exactly. I know that.
That's how sick it is.
Right.
And but I'm saying, first of all, DEI, and the last four chapters in the book are about DEI and what to do with it, what needs to be done, one of which is to take all the money away that's being devoted to it. So because it's costing tens and tens of billions of millions of dollars. And there are people who have jobs that they will never, you know, they have jobs they will fight to the death to hold on to, because they will never have had a chance at a job like that before. Mm-hmm. Because they're not really, a lot of them aren't particularly educated. And plus they're not doing it for the right reasons. The reality is, as Booker T. Washington, who was a great man 100 and some years ago, said, and he was Black, he said, in the Black community, and I have seen this with the 1619 Project and all the consultancies and all the DEI and Ibram Kendi at Boston University, who's wrote Anti-Racism and really feeds on this whole thing. The reality is that Booker T. Washington said, in the Black community, the tragedy is there are some Blacks, a small number, but some Blacks, who have to have racism because they're proclaiming it all the time as how they make money for themselves.
Right.
And that's a large part of what's going on now. It's we take ideas that we all, you know, I could, and so could you, in my experience.
Sure.
If they think about it, there are 80, 90% of the American public are committed to these ideals.
Yeah.
But they don't think about them every day. One thing they do think about is, my God, they're the right ideas, so nobody's trying to wreck them. But there are people who are trying to use them and wreck them. And that's what we face right now.
Wow. It's unbelievable. What do you foresee? I mean, obviously, just some highlights from your books. I'm sure that these answers are in your book. But it's a solution. You know what I mean? The solutions. What are you seeing as kind of the top ones for maybe people that are listening or watching as like, man, here's what we've got to get down to. Here's where we start to make this change.
Well, part of it, I mean, there are so many things that need to be done, but part of it, take the idea of gun ownership, gun control, right? I own guns. My children do. We don't go crazy and run around shoot people. But in each situation, we have taken discipline, special training to know how to use the guns.
Yeah.
And how not to use them. And so when everybody, including, I would say to the NRA, it's great. I'm in favor of gun control if you want one. But there should be, and a lot of people disagree with that. This the NRA certainly would. The point is, you have to, if you're going to take something that is so precious and so dangerous or so necessary, you better be expected to be able to be trained in the in the use of it.
Absolutely.
And I think, to me, that's an obvious thing, but for certain groups, it's totally political. And because they see it, and I don't think if you could trust your government, which we can't at this point, you can't trust them to destroy records of even after you've qualified. There are real issues there.
Right. But
the point I'm raising it is for parenting.
Mm-hmm.
Parents have rights. I would be incensed if people intruded with my rights. I mean, we have grandchildren now, but my rights over that. But there have to be, if parents care deeply about this, there need to be some forms of making sure that parents have thought through some of these issues also.
Yeah.
Including what we're talking about. Because if you don't, in something as volatile as this, or almost any important issue, if you don't accept the responsibility, they assert responsibility of parenting, okay?
Yeah.
I give it to you. Now, part of your responsibility is not just to have a free pass. Part of your responsibility is work at being a damn good parent.
Right.
And think about what the issues are. Because one of the hardest things I've ever done is be father to 3 children and 8 grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And be a husband, too.
Yeah.
But my wife tells me what to do. So.
Oh, that's funny. That's
great.
But that's a very true statement, because I think, you know, and we can go back and actually look again. You can go back to the 60s. You can see the women's lib movement. You can see where all of a sudden women start. Well, no, I want a job. And so now all of a sudden you've got both parents in a work environment. And now who's left to watch the children? And that was planned, I believe, as well, part of this whole system, the part of the breakdown. Let's get them increased costs so that a family can't survive on one income. You need to have both people. And now the kids are latchkey kids, you know, and then it breaks down the marriage. And now most of our kids are being raised in a single parent home, you know, and it's just this never ending cycle. Do you think we can ever get back, rewind the clock, so to speak, and get back to these foundational truths?
The golden age of
the
United States.
Yeah.
I think the only thing we can do is figure out what a new golden age is. But it's, I'll tell you, in 2019, my son Dan, who teaches at Michigan State in their law school, and I co-authored a book called The Artificial Intelligence Contagion. And so the subtitle was, Can Democracy Withstand the Imminent Transformation of Work, Wealth, and the Social Order? And Clarity Press published that book, and it was a very good book. And the reality is we face so many critical artificial intelligence, robotics, job destruction, job shifting, education shifting, everything, like you said at the beginning, everything's changing.
Yeah.
So we have, what I'm trying to capture is how it's changing and what we have to do. But one of the main problems we have is our leadership of, you know, whatever you want to say it. We're electing them, we're choosing them, we're allowing them to, like in federal agencies, and I dealt with Washington a lot. I lived there multiple times. I worked with congressional committees and other people in there. And the problem is, a lot of people are just dumber than dirt, or they're lazy.
Right, lazy. Or both.
Or both.
You know?
And they don't look at what's happening and really understand it. And I'm trying to communicate that. But as you said a moment ago, what we face, and the projections are in the AI book, but what we face in terms of job destruction, job loss, costs, we're entering, I just saw an article yesterday about, we're about this year to set a record in the number of people in the US turning 65.
Yeah.
Pope Francis 4 or 5 years ago made a speech about European situations, and he described what he called the age curse.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a multiplicity of situations where people wanted to retire but don't have the resources that they can retire, but they still want to retire. And then you have the situation where you can't get a lot of young people to actually work, even though they're capable of working, and that's a serious issue. You have to ask yourself,
how
are we doing that?
That's a huge problem right now. Yeah.
Then you have a problem of the output of urban public schools, most of them minority oriented, and the fact that they have done such a tragic job under the leadership of many leaders who, in fact, were minorities and supposedly committed the rhetoric they use when they run for office or anything. Talk to you about how wonderful the future is for some. The reality is the urban public schools are a combination of incompetence, violence, single family in many of them, single family kids who the person who is in the family, the grandmothers with some degree of commitment to values aren't there anymore. So they died off. And so now you're in a situation where the immediate head of the family, that single parent family, is a young female who may or may not have gone to school herself. And, you know, as the record is that probably over half of the kids who are given diplomas from those schools can't read, can't do math. They can't do basic tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that happens elsewhere than those urban schools, but it's an incredible problem for the urban public schools and what we do about it. As you talk about, what are we going to do about the people who, they're not going to be left behind. We could always say left behind, but we will suffer from trying to do that too.
Exactly.
To some degree, both humanistically and culturally and violence, because that's where a lot of the gangs come from. Because that's their, just like the Communist
that's
Party.
Their family.
That's their family. And so they obey. Even if they were good kids in heart, they still, you know, the bad people always take over, or almost always take over the leadership, because they're willing to do anything to gain the power.
Yeah.
That it gives them. So if you don't obey them, they're the Mao who comes in and shoots you.
Yeah.
You know, so you either do what you're told or, you know, you're out.
And
it's not very nice.
No.
But that's a problem. We have many layers: aging population, disabled population, all kinds of chemically altered population, addicted population, uneducated population, greedy population. I mean, think about that. So that's why I said, do I think it can just be turned around? What? No, it can't.
Too many layers. Yeah, there's way too many layers.
Too many layers, and they have been building for so 30, 40 years. And so you have at least two generations of people who went through this really disgusting system. Without the Marxist stuff, you know, we're in trouble, even if we were real, honest, social justice people, which, well, we are. But I mean, if we were in charge of it and had the ability to do it, you'd still have to do so much and use some power also, which is always dangerous because people who need help often don't want help, which is which is one of the problems with the growth in homelessness in Canada and the country, because and sort of people in need, serious need of mental health assistance.
They don't want it.
They don't want
it. They can't even see it because their mind isn't functioning correctly. So they can't even, you know, they almost don't have the choice to sometimes of whether they want the help because they can't even.
A lot of times they don't because there are a lot of systems trying to help them and they walk off and do their own thing.
It's this. I mean, people need to get this book because there's so much. Obviously, we're just touching the surface. I'm going to share where everybody can get your book on Amazon. Amazon, is that the best place for people to go?
Probably. But it's, you know, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. You can order it there. There are some places if you do some research on it. The price, you know, there's readable one. There is the hardcover one. I guess a lot of people prefer the readable, the electronic machine.
Yeah, sometimes. Not me. I'm still old school. I want a hardcover book. I really like actual books.
I read things online and research all the time, but I really like to hold a book in my hands.
Exactly. Yeah, it's, I mean, this is, you know, I love this quote that is on here. It's the description, really. The power to use the university as an overarching medium that offers a strong sense of legitimacy to even flawed and overstated arguments and assertions is why the institution is a target of an ideological left that is now dominated by advocates of wokeism and critical race theory. I mean, I remember as a kid, like in grade school, and I mean, I was a kid of the 80s. And so we had a project once and I remember coming home and my mom looked at it and she wouldn't let me do it. And I, you know, as a kid, I was like, okay, you know, like I didn't understand. I just was like, but I have to do my project. And she said, no, you're not doing this. And it was a worksheet with like a boat and there were all these people in the boat and they explained who was who. You know, one was a pregnant person, one was an older person, one was, you know, maybe I don't even know if it was a disabled person because that really didn't exist for him as much as it does now. And you had to pick, you had to take certain people had to die. They had to get out of the boat. And which ones were you going to pick and why? And I remember my mom saying, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing that project. You know, knowing back then, this is that was that early stage of judgment and race, really critical race. I mean, it was pushing, it's pushing segregation. My son just showed me there's, I think it's the governor or maybe it's the senator from Michigan, and that they're now offering, and I mean, this is real, you guys, the government is offering to pay you via tax credit or tax refund if you will house an illegal immigrant, and they can work for you. You guys, that's slavery.
Right.
The government is going to pay you to have a slave live in your home. That is what that's the reality of what that is. That's not being helpful. That's literally recreating slavery of a different race.
It is, but it also slavery on one. You could call it slavery on one side and danger to your family on another side.
Totally.
They know virtually nothing about the people who are millions of people who are flooding into the country.
Yes.
I'm not opposed to immigration. To way they're doing it, that just should not occur. We have, we were admitting a million people a year very carefully before. That's one thing. There was also this kind of thing, but on a much lower level. And but you just cannot in this world of any time, but in this world of today, you cannot let in people into your border who you don't know who they are. You don't know their motivations. We're supposed to be a country that believes. You know, you talk about Emma Lazarus, Statue of Liberty, the quotes on that about give me your lame, your halt, your poor, your, whatever. And you take that. You can adopt that ideal, but you get those people because they want to be in your country and strengthen that country and accept the ideals of that of this country.
Yep.
And right now, what we have done is let in at least 8. I mean, they're lying about how many people, because they don't even know for sure. Mm-hmm. They know at least 8 million over the last 3 years. And if you do that, you're just opening yourself up to creating a very, very negative situation.
Yeah, it's very, very dangerous. I mean, we're seeing it already. We're seeing already.
But that's almost petty. I'm talking about...
Yes.
Organized groups.
Right. And we have no idea yet what that's going to look like. We have no idea the effect that's going to have on our nation yet.
Including the flow of young Chinese, as they say, military age males.
Yeah.
And Middle Eastern also.
Yeah. Who've been trained.
Who've been trained. I mean, I was a consultant. I worked in the Mongolian government on a project on sustainable development project with them. And the Chinese tried after I finished that came to the presentation that I did to the Mongolian parliament, and they wanted to have me do the same thing for them. And I said, no, they were shocked because you're supposed to really, I mean, the reality is I won't do something for a totalitarian authoritarian government.
Yeah. Good for you. Yeah.
Couldn't help
Wow.
it.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this has been fantastic. Is there anything else you would like to leave everybody with? Anything we haven't touched on before we close today? I know. I mean, that's a loaded
question. This is what I'm saying. I would recommend looking at a comprehensive approach to the book. And if they get that, something they might share with somebody. I deliberately created a chapter by chapter topical index, which is at the back of the book, because if you look at that, it really helps you get or understand the whole range of issues and the things that we face and the things we have to deal with. Puts it together, I think, and so does the book itself and the table of contents, but it puts it together as a package. And I think just people need to understand how widespread, how critical, and how much of a responsive strategy needs to occur. But we also need to understand, can't we elect somebody who, you know, but it's not a single person, but can't we elect somebody who understands what we're talking about and can put a system together with good people, the best people,
yeah,
to pursue it. I'm not opposed to Donald Trump at all. He had a lot of good actions. I hate his personal behavior. He's like a little brat, like a WEP. You know, if I were in school and he was one of my classmates and he started pulling the stuff he does and calling people names, I just smack him.
Right.
Really, I'm not kidding. You know, as a kid,
right.
Not as an adult. It's it's childish, it's demeaning, yeah. It creates problems for him that are just ridiculous to have. But policy-wise, mm-hmm, I think he had a clearer grasp and willingness to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he's perfect guy for any of this, but I don't see any other alternative.
Right. Nobody that's willing to, because it's got to be somebody who's willing to go up against the system and say no.
What they have done to him,
right,
since he got elected.
Yeah.
This has been a witch hunt, a persecution ever since he got elected, or even before, because they started that Russian collusion false thing and didn't do anything to the people who did it.
Exactly.
Created the situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But again, it goes back to that's the system they created. That's the whole mindset. It's what they do.
Exactly.
Wow. Yep. Well, David, this has been so wonderful to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here. And for everybody that's watching and listening, you need to go get this book. All right. So go over to Amazon and get the book, the full title of it. I'm going to tell you the full title of it again. Conformity Colleges, The Destruction of Intellectual Creativity and Dissent in America's Universities. Go over to Amazon. Get the Kindle, get the hard copy, whatever, and read this so that you're educated, so that you see where we are and how we got here and why we're here and how we work together to get out of this. One person can't do this. This has to be a united effort. We have to work together to attack this and to change and to create the new, I like that, to create the new golden age. That's ultimately what we need. So, David, thank you so much. I'm so grateful that you are here, and thank you for writing this book and all of your work. Hang tight. Y'all, thank you so much for joining us today. I want to remind you as well, if you've got health issues, which all of us do, we're all dealing with something, and many of us are kind of getting tired of it, and we want to get our health back. I've got a free video series that I really want to encourage you to do. Go over to the website, iwantmyhealthback.com/Tanya Joy, and check out the free video series. And then I'll have more information later. But for right now, my heart is to just get people to wake up and realize what the heck is going on. And so this video series, it's a short, there's a few of them you can watch. It's going to help you understand that. Thank you again for joining. As you know, we do end the show with a Bible verse. And today is Deuteronomy 6:7. And it's repeat the things, the rules, the stories again and again to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you are on the road and when you are going to bed and when you are getting up. And you guys, this is what we've got to do as a family. We've got to go back to speaking the truth, telling our kids the truth of what's going on, the truth of the history of this nation, the truth of life and who they are, so that we do not continue down this path of Marxism and communism. Again, thank you for watching. Check us out over at TanyaJoy.tv. Watch us on the Blessed News Network or on Rumble, Clout Hub, or you can hear us on any of the podcast streaming. Thanks again. And until next time, bye for now. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Beauty for Ashes with Tanya Joy. Please subscribe, hit the notification bell, and leave us a comment below. Lastly, if you've enjoyed today's podcast, share with those who came to mind. Be blessed, and remember, you were created for such a time as this.